Our service this morning is focused on our fifth Unitarian principle. We covenant to affirm and promote the right of conscience and the use of the democratic process within our congregations and in society at large. In the spirit of this principle, I'm sharing a reading by the Reverend Mark Bellatini. Burning fire, do not consume us, as once with that bush of old, but continue to kindle us, and let the inner voice of our calling to love and duty be loud in our hearts. World of lies and torture, now tremble as citizens of the future age, seize the opportunity of justice making. Like that Galilean prophet of old, Jesus, may we know our deepest calling, to set fire to the whole earth and burn to ash in ethical fire the monstrous evils of bigotry and dishonesty, violence and self-deception. Where there is fear, may we put response. Where we see eyes filled with terror, may we reach out to embrace and welcome. Spirit fire of our deepest longing, keep us from arrogance and superior attitudes. May we never think ourselves giddy with the flash of fire, but may we love only its steady heat and constancy. From the tangles of our daily obsessions and habits, lift us to loftier thoughts of peace and clean justice. Plunge us into that deeper baptism of commitment and courage. Spirit of fire, eternal kinship binding us to a brotherhood and sisterhood deeper than blood or politics or religion, kindle us to thy unswerving love. I'd like to invite Tyler Vitey to come and share his sharing with us.
Good morning, everyone. You know, it seems fitting that with the election tomorrow that I'd be asked to come up here and speak on the fifth principle and how that, you know, affects my life. You know, the right of conscience and the use of the democratic process. I really got tripped up on this. You know, when I was asked to present to you today, I was really excited. I think, wow, what an honor. This is so great. I thought it would be really easy to just be able to, like, had all these ideas. I would just, like, flow on a paper, and I'd be able to come up here and just wow you with all my dazzling words. And I got to tell you, it wasn't that easy. I was up through the night last night even just trying to come to terms with what is conscience? What does this mean to me? What is democracy? How does this affect me in my personal life? How does this affect my community? You know, I reflected on a time when I was young, when my life was a little bit pure, and there was this one moment, I remember, it's one afternoon, I was a six-year-old lad, grade one. I was playing, and a classmate had this toy, and we just all fell in love with it, and I wanted it. I wanted it bad. And I was lucky enough that there was this other girl who had a tendency of, you know, taking things. So I was able to fly under the radar and was able to get this toy, this prized toy. And I was able to bring it home unknowing any, like, nobody knew. I was very unprepared of the questions that would come when I got home, of course. And so naturally, my parents asked where I had gotten this toy. And I just, first of all, let me tell you, oh, it was beautiful. It was this yellow race car, and if you can just imagine, this yellow race car, sort of a Formula One style with really big black wheels on it. And it was as fast on the shag carpet of our living room floor as it was across any linoleum that you would find in any of the houses those days. I had to have it. I brought it home. I took it. I wanted it. It seemed very easy to me. Naturally, when I got home, my parents asked, "Where did you get that?" I wasn't prepared for that question. I said, well, a friend gave it to me. They said, oh, really? Who? Yeah, Scott Forrester. Gulp. And then I wasn't prepared for the next question that came flying at me. It was like a bullet, and it just struck me right here. And it was like, are you lying to us? And in my six-year-old wisdom, fiercely protecting that prize of mine, I said, absolutely, like, no, I'm not lying. And I don't know if they believed me or they just didn't have the energy to go through with anything, but they just let it be. And in that moment, I hadn't really understood what a conscience was. I guess even the word I would never really understand for quite a while, but I was, stabbed, like continually stabbed. I wasn't able to play with that toy any longer. And for years, I buried it in my toy box. I wasn't able to look at it. If I somehow like caught a glimpse of it, or if for some reason like a friend came over and pulled it out, I'd be, no, you can't put it back. My life had changed in that moment. Life was so pure. It seemed that I was leading a life of joy. I was, I just wanted to do with the things that I wanted to do. I wanted to go play sports and have friends, and I wanted to go outside. I wanted to go fishing. I wanted to ride my bike. And after that moment, I somehow had to reconcile the idea of wanting something and getting something with the idea of the risk of what it takes to get it. And to me, ultimately, I guess that's what conscience is as I've grown older, those feelings, they've become more dull. And for whatever reason, I've kind of recessed into isolation and out of community. Went through a period in my early adult years that I called the big fade. And it's a time where I spend more time playing video games than I was even working. I didn't really seek out friends. I moved all over northern Canada. I was doing work for a trucking company, putting out fires wherever they wanted me. I would go. It served me, served purpose, because I wasn't able to spend any time in any one place to be able to grow the relationships. I really had a hard time sitting with myself. And I found that I wasn't able to hear that conscience. Like it became silent. Not being in community with people sort of allowed me to a life of apathy and distance and just ignoring the things that were important to me. I for some reason, I just couldn't handle my life. I really even don't know how. But for some reason, I was rotting inside. I felt dead, And I just knew I couldn't keep living like that. Like, what kind of an existence is that? And so I knew that there was another way, and I just tried to find a way to work on myself. And with time, quite a lot has happened in 7 years. A lot. And I'm coming back. I'm here at Beacon, and I'm trying to invest in a community now, and I'm finding that I'm actually quite clumsy. My conscience is there, but it pings every time I think that I do a slight, that I'm perhaps misaligned with something that I find very meaningful. I'm very interested in wanting to connect with each of you, but I don't know how. And if for some reason I think that I've harmed you or what have you, those barbs I feel again and again. And it's really hard to come back and step forward because I keep feeling that. And yet, that's where I see it possible to have the joy that I used to have when I was a kid. I'm kind of all over the place here, so. As I've re-entered a community and the community has become more important to me, you know, the political arena definitely becomes more important to me, and I've found that I've become more and more passionate about the direction of my country and wanting to find a way to, like, I'm a smart guy and I know what it's gonna take to save my country. Now, if I can just make everybody believe what I do. I started with my dad, and I thought it would be fairly easy. You know, he loves me, I love him. You know, we have pretty polarizing opinions of things, but we have pretty similar values. And I thought that if I was just able to connect with him, I would just be able, like, that he could understand where I'm coming from. And because he loves me, he would gift his vote to me, right? Yeah, it didn't quite work out that way. And every time we tried, we'd get really angry, and instead of coming together, we'd really be pushed far apart, really have this incredible distance. And I tried again, and as frustrated as I got, with all these different people, I wasn't able to grow my one vote into more, and I'm at a loss for how to do that. So I was thinking about this over and over and again, and I do some volunteering at the Crisis Intervention and Suicide Prevention Center of BC. It's a crisis center. I spent a couple hours a week there, been there for 3.5 years. I did the training while, actually we had Emily in the midst of it. For some reason, it's always been vitally important for me, even though my commute, you know, has lengthened and my life has gotten busier. This is a piece of my life that is vitally important to me. And just to give you a sense of what it's like there, people will call in with the idea that, you know, well, they're in crisis, and they call because, hoping against hope, they're trying to find a way that somebody can understand where they're at, somebody that can be there with them. And I'm able to make a difference in those moments, whether it's for 10 minutes or 20 minutes or longer. It's really quite beautiful, you know. It's amazing what changes can happen if I take the time to understand where somebody is coming from without a vested interest in trying to change them or in them understanding who I am. You know, with true active listening, somebody can call in and be at risk of killing themselves, and at the end of the call, they're in a truly transformed nature. So when I think about democracy and I think about this election that we're having tomorrow, to me, how do we affect change? It's truly by listening to one another, and it's truly by, regardless of party politics and the bipartisan rhetoric that we all hear, is if we take a moment to actually truly see who we each other are, I think then maybe we have a hope of building a really beautiful world. And so I really appreciate this chance to be able to talk to you, and thank you.
Good morning. First of all, I want to apologize that Kathy and I have been absent from Beacon so far this fall. We're in the process of downsizing from our single-family residence of 22 years, and it's turning out to be a big job, but we thought it better that we did it than our children have to do it later on. And Kathy's away this week in Ohio visiting her sister, along with our daughter and our grandson. So, in any event, I was quite surprised when Joan invited me to speak at today's service about our fifth Unitarian principle. I get asked from time to time to speak about homelessness and affordable housing, but never about governance and society. And as I thought about Joan's request, I thought here was an opportunity to emulate my favorite comedian Rick Mercer and have a rant. about the current state of provincial and federal politics in this country, Lord knows there's lots of material to work with. For instance, I could talk about how referendums on taxes abrogate government's responsibility to make decisions, how the term taxpayer focuses on what it costs to be a citizen rather than the kind of society we want, how political parties of all stripes abandon their principles when they see an opportunity to curry voter favor, how I'm tired of being told what my Canadian values are, how the environment, Aboriginal relations, and housing affordability have not been front and center in the current federal election campaign, and how, in particular, current federal politics plays to our basest instincts rather than our noblest selves. But I'm not going to do that. Because although political parties do choose the issues to exploit an election, we, the people, choose the government. And it might surprise you that I'm not alarmed by right-wing populist politicians such as Rob Ford or Donald Trump, whose outrageous behavior or reactionary declarations are an affront at all that is decent or compassionate in our society. After all, people in this world come in all shapes and sizes and demeanors. What I am disturbed by are the choices that people make when they vote for them. Apparently, these citizens feel alienated and disenfranchised by the more mainstream politicians, believing that they are governed by the elites who take care only of themselves. The Oxford Dictionary defines democracy as, one, government by all the people, direct or representative, and two, a form of society ignoring hereditary class distinction and tolerating minority views. To meet this definition, real democracy, whether direct or representative, must start from the bottom up, from citizen voters who transcend narrow self-interest and vote with community well-being in mind. But democracy requires more than simply voting. Our challenge, in spite of government that plays to our meanest selves, is to stay open-minded, generous, and compassionate. CBC's Ideas program on September the 29th featured Calgary's Mayor Naheed Nenshi. I don't know if you've ever heard him speak, but it's quite riveting. Usually I listen to Ideas as I'm getting ready for bed, brushing my teeth and so on. And when I heard him talking, I stopped and I listened to the whole program because it's so pleasant to hear him talk and inspiring. The program was entitled Doing the Right Thing, and that was a theme that was repeated throughout the program. And Mayor Nenshi spoke of a program of civic engagement started in Calgary, which encouraged citizens to do three things each year for their city and to develop a lifetime habit of service. And he used the spontaneous reaction of thousands of Calgarians in the early summer of 2013, helping those in flood-affected neighborhoods to repair the damage as an example of doing the right thing on a large scale. To quote Mayor Nenshi, what we know is that we've figured out a simple truth, one which evades too many in this broken world. And that simple truth is just this: we're in this together. Our neighbor's strength is our strength. The success of any one of us is the success of every one of us. And more important, the failure of any one of us is the failure of every one of us. I was inspired by what the mayor said and how he said it, and realized how long it had been since I'd been excited by what a politician had to say. So I see two requirements for enlightened democracy. First, in inspiring leaders who excite, engage, have vision and commitment. And secondly, citizens engaged in making thoughtful decisions, decisions that transcend our meanest selves, that are measured against values of responsibility and respect for others, and for the commons, the cultural and natural resources that we share with all mankind. The description for today's service said I would explore what the fifth principle means to me, my concerns, and how they influence my life. I hope by this time you have discerned my concerns with respect to the current state of our, I hope by this time you've discerned my concerns with respect to the current state of our democracy, but I've been influenced in three ways. First of all, government can't do it all. Second, we have a responsibility to care. And third, we get the society we deserve. These energized me personally to engage in addressing homelessness and affordable housing in the Tri-Cities. I've always been deeply troubled by the idea of homelessness, people who are disconnected from our community, lack the support of family and friends they can rely on, and feel invisible. All I ask from our politicians from time to time is a bit of hope, an inspiring message, and a vision of our country that invigorates me.